You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Generative AI is now fueling cybercrime. It's fueling it to such a rate that we start doubting whether it is real or not. And for most people, it is very difficult to answer that question correctly.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to N2K's CyberWire's Hacking Humans podcast, where each week we look behind the social engineering scams, phishing schemes, and criminal exploits that are making headlines and taking a heavy toll on organizations around the world. I'm Dave Bittner, and joining me is Joe Kerrigan from the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Dave.
We got some good stories to share this week, and later in the show, my conversation with Bogdan Batezatu, who's Director of Threat Research at Bitdefender. We're talking about audio deepfakes. We'll be right back after this message from our show sponsor. But first, a word from our sponsors at KnowBefore. Time travel would be a particularly powerful tool in the hands of any overworked InfoSec professional. Think about it. Being able to see the future and know which malicious emails would be missed by all the existing filters. Your ability to stay one step ahead of the bad actors would rise to a whole new level. Unfortunately, our sponsors haven't cracked time travel just yet. They are, however, introducing a new phishing protection product that can block and remove dangerous phishing emails before your users even see them. Stay with us, and in a few minutes, you'll learn how. All right, Joe, before we dig in here, we got a little bit of follow-up.
We do.
This is from a kind listener named Lara. I'm assuming
she's writing from London, so I would say it just like it's spelled.
Lara.
That's why they call Nissan.
So say Lara. Right. Like an American.
Right. Or Laura.
Lara. Okay. Lara. It's probably Lara. There you go. Lara writes in and says, "Hey guys, London-based listener here. Please bear with me. It's Piccadilly Circus,
okay.
Not Circle. Okay. Point taken." Next.
You are correct.
Lara says, "It's a tube subway station, not a train station."
Okay, I did
once
ask
again,
that question. So thank you for the clarification. It is a tube station. And isn't that called the Underground? London Underground?
I suppose.
But they call it, slang is the tube.
Right.
Right.
But, you see, I think one of the issues here is that Europe has such vastly superior public transportation than we do.
Well, of course they do,
partly
Dave.
Because things are closer together,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
So
I mean,
flying from
D.C. to Kansas City is the same as the distance from Warsaw to Paris.
Okay.
This country is huge.
So, for me, if I'm taking the D.C. Metro, I would still consider that of taking a train because it's running on tracks.
Rail. Right.
Right. Train tracks.
Right.
But I do appreciate the subtle distinction that Lara's making.
I will say here on the East Coast, there is a distinction between subway systems. Like, you can get on the Metro, right?
Yeah.
Then you can get on Amtrak, which is more like a rail.
Right.
And then wind up on the New York subway system.
Yeah.
At Grand Central.
That's true. And we have commuter rail, which is different from Amtrak, which is our passenger rail.
Right.
National, that's hard to say. National Passenger Rail System.
Yes.
All right, continuing on.
Right.
Lara says, "You don't need a ticket, you just tap a card. There are no paper tickets any longer."
Okay.
All right?
We don't know how old the story was.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's the way the Metro works now too.
Yeah. Tickets are about £7. The guy spent £20. I have no clue what he bought, but it wasn't a one-way ticket. Well, I mean, if you have a card, I suspect you can load up that card with as much money as you want, so... Also, if this was someone who is unfamiliar with the money, right?
Right. Or how things work.
Right. But they might just say, "Oh, well, you know, what do I got here? I got a 20. I'll just put this on the card, whatever."
Yeah.
And then last but certainly not least, Lara says, "Americans get recognized and scammed everywhere because of how clueless you guys look."
I love this.
Yeah. Guilty.
Yep.
"The mere fact most Americans say things like, 'I'm going to Europe,' as if it was a country, makes you a target."
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so turnabout is fair play. I would point out, our producer, Jen, made the point that if Lara's coming on this side of the pond,
yeah,
it is likely that she would say, I'm going to America.
Yes.
Which is two continents.
Yes. Not just one, two
right,
of them.
Right, right. So,
and I've already,
now, to be fair, we don't know Lara. She might just say that she's going to visit the United States, in which
case— I've already
case,
covered the difference between, or the difference in distances.
Right.
And a lot of times when people are going to Europe, they will go to multiple countries. Mm-hmm. So, like, you can go to Germany and then France and then Switzerland and then
that's true.
Everything else. In fact, the only time I've ever been to Europe, I went to Ireland and Northern Ireland, which is part of the United Kingdom. So, yeah, even staying on one little tiny island, the island of Ireland, I went to two countries.
Right. Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, for an American to say we're going to Europe,
right?
Because we are taking a European vacation. To your point, we're probably visiting multiple countries,
right?
Because they're so darn close together.
They are.
Why not?
Right next door to each other. They're smaller than states, Dave.
Right. So it's an issue of scale. All right. Well.
My favorite thing is when somebody comes to the U.S. and says, I'm going to drive down to Disney World and then fly out to California and see the Redwoods. Mm-hmm. And like, how long are you going to be here? A week. You're not doing all that.
Yeah, that's
not
true.
Going to happen.
Right. No, they do. There is a tendency to think that, especially when you get out west, that
yeah,
things are
so huge,
spread yeah, out.
I was thinking about Los Angeles the other day.
Yeah.
How big that city is.
Yeah.
Like when you fly out of it, you're up in the clouds before you're out from underneath of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's huge.
Right. It's a mile wide and an inch deep.
Right, yeah.
They
it's
don't
very,
build
it's
up.
Very low,
yeah,
but it's
yeah,
so enormous.
Yeah. Well, Lara, thank you for
thank
writing
you.
In.
And we do love hearing this good-natured ribbing.
Yes, you're a good sport, and we appreciate it. And we wear our ugly Americanism on our sleeves,
yeah,
as a point of pride, I guess.
Almost, yeah. Kind of.
Yeah. At least we acknowledge it.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for writing in. We do appreciate it. And of course, we would love to hear from you. If there's something you'd like us to cover on the show, you can email us. It's hackinghumans@n2k.com. All right, Joe, let's dig into some stories here. You want to start things off for us?
Yes. I want to start off by talking about PCI-DSS or PCI-DSS.
This oh, is the goody.
Payment card industry data security standard. Now, you might say, oh, goody, Dave.
I may say, oh, goody, with dripping with sarcasm. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
But first off, version 4 of this standard became mandatory on April 1st of this year.
Well, it's about time.
Right. It got released about 2 years ago.
Okay.
And now it's required. And there were some changes to the standard that I think are pretty good.
Okay.
I'm going to go so far as to call them awesome.
All right.
In the old standard, 3.2.
So wait. Before we dig in,
yeah,
what
maybe
is
I
this?
Should explain what this is.
What is PCI DSS? What
right.
is it?
Excellent point, Dave. I was just rolling along as if everybody knew what this security standard was.
Slow down, egghead.
It is. PCI is short for the payment card industry, which is an organization, you know, of people that work with payment cards.
Right.
Right. And the DSS is the data security standard, which
okay.
dictates that if you're going to accept credit cards and hold credit card data, there are certain security standards to which you must adhere.
Okay.
It is the reason that now all the gas stations in the United States have chip readers in
right,
them.
Right, right, yeah.
That has been delayed. I think that's now part and parcel of this. Everybody has to have that.
Okay.
In fact, I can't remember the last time I saw a gas pump without a chip reader, which is good.
And this is an area where we have lagged the rest of the world.
Yeah, you know, it is.
We've always been a year or two behind.
Yes.
So it's okay.
Those great people over in London, they were way ahead of us.
Well, of course. Over at Piccadilly Circle.
Right. No more letters. So there have been some changes. And of course, all these data security standards, NIST releases their own, but this is a private sector data security standard,
mm-hmm.
and it's called the PCI DSS. And the changes that I want to talk about are the changes to the social engineering portion of the standard.
Oh, okay.
So in the past, a broad security awareness campaign would have sufficed to meet the requirement of the data security standard. So as long as you had some kind of security awareness thing going on at your company, then you could check the box with PCI.
And this is for someone who takes credit cards.
This is for someone who takes credit cards.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to say this. There are different layers of people that take credit cards. Like, not every small business can comply with these requirements, right? Mm-hmm. So they'll use something like Square or
PayPal.
Yeah, that's another good one.
Yeah.
And what they do, what those companies do is they totally remove that responsibility from the business owner, the small business owner, and they encrypt that data completely along the traffic so that the small business owner never really sees the credit card.
Right.
They never really have it in their custody. So if their systems get breached, someone gets access to them, they're not going to get any credit card information because it's been secured by these other third-party providers, which is a great business model.
Yeah.
Because not every small business can afford to comply with the PCI DSS.
Right.
But you can just go out and get a Square account, pay a little bit more per transaction, which you as a small business can probably just jack your prices up a little bit more to compensate. And you're in business, which is great. You can take payment cards.
Right.
The new requirement, and this I think is very good wording, targeted security awareness training tailored to the specific risks faced by company employees.
Hmm.
That's great. Because if you just have a security awareness campaign that doesn't answer the mail on what kind of threats you're going to be receiving, it's of very little use to you. It also mandates the use of a couple of technologies, including anti-phishing filters, which are like anti-spam filters or just on your email.
Right.
And then social engineering simulation tools.
Oh, okay.
Much like the ones provided by our sponsor, KnowBe4.
Yeah.
Other companies also provide them, but they're out there. These are phishing tools. You can even do training that provides when you click on the link, you actually wind up clicking on a training link.
Right.
You clicked that and you shouldn't have. What I like about that model is that it's quick, it's on demand when it's needed, and it doesn't take a lot of time.
Yeah, it's catching the person. Catching is probably not the right word here because it's not like a gotcha sort of catch.
Right.
But you're catching the person at the very moment when
they've made the mistake.
When they've made the mistake, right. And so they're primed to learn that lesson.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, the article, by the way, I'm referencing an article from IT Online.
Okay.
And we'll put a link in the show notes. But this article adds that it might be a good idea to implement policies around social media usage.
Hmm.
I hadn't even considered that as, I don't know that it's part of the PCI DSS here.
Right.
But it would be a good thing to do at work.
For your employees.
For your employees, yeah. Tell them how they're going to use Facebook, you know, at work. Or LinkedIn. If you're on LinkedIn, think about this. You're on LinkedIn. LinkedIn has a messaging service, LinkedIn Messenger.
Right.
And somebody knows where you work. And if they're hitting you at 9 to 5 Eastern Daylight Time, they know you're probably at the office.
Mm-hmm.
And they can send you a message going, hey, I want to share this with you. Maybe it's a job opportunity. Hey, can you review my resume? Here's a document. And it's just a link to a phishing site.
Right.
You can get your Office 365 credentials stolen that way. I mean, this is a very good point is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Put some policy around how your employees interact on social media while they're at the office.
So, I mean, it strikes me that in the same way that insurance companies help make homes and offices safer by saying, you know, if you install sprinklers, you're
right.
going to get a lower insurance rate.
Yep.
This is the PCI folks saying, you're going to do these things and it's going to make everybody safer. We're going to require this.
Yes, because their insurance companies are saying you're going to require this.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doing all these things like that, complying with this new standard is going to make your employees a lot more likely to be able to recognize and handle social engineering attacks when they're happening.
Yeah.
If you leave your employees out in the wilderness, even if you don't do payment cards or they're not payment card handling people, you're just leaving them open for these kind of attacks. And there are plenty of third parties out there that can help your organization with these compliance requirements and other compliance requirements as well. So I would say take advantage of that. I know you're a small company. If you're a small company, you can't afford the massive security budget.
Right.
So use a company like Square that you just never even see the credit card information.
Right. Right.
But still, make sure that you have anybody that accesses your bank accounts taking some security awareness training and some and understand what their risk is.
And it, I mean, I think this emphasizes that an organization as large and widespread as the folks who handle PCI feel like this is time well spent.
Yes.
Right? This is an investment in your employees' time.
Yes.
But the time they spend on this ultimately could very well save you a ton of time and money on the headaches of dealing with a data breach.
That's right. And one of the things I like about this is it's a kind of a mandatory compliance for a business that wants to manage its own credit card systems.
Right.
So it's kind of like the heavy hammer coming down on these businesses.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we find ourselves in the same situation. Like, all this money you're going to spend on this will be well spent if nothing happens.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah.
That's the measure of success with cybersecurity professionals, is right. Nothing happens.
Right. All right, well, that is interesting indeed. And like you said, we will have a link to that story in the show notes. My story this week, Joe, I'm actually going to focus on a letter we got from a listener.
Okay.
This is from a listener named Deanna, who asked that we share this story. So I'm going to read it.
Okay.
It says, "Dear Hacking Humans team, I'm writing you amidst a harrowing situation involving my recently widowed grandmother, who has fallen victim to pig butchering. Mm. Despite our family's best efforts to intervene, she is being manipulated to an extent that has resulted in severe financial loss and emotional turmoil for all involved. My grandmother, whom I'll refer to as Nana, after selling her husband's truck, became entangled with a scammer known as Richard.
Mm-hmm.
This relationship originated from the sale, though it's unclear if it was online or through another channel. This person has isolated her from our family, beginning with my uncle, a recently retired police officer. After extensive investigation, my uncle uncovered that Richard was impersonating a deceased man and presented numerous inconsistencies in his story. Despite presenting this evidence to Nana, she has become increasingly alienated from us. Richard has convinced her of his false identity in a fabricated scenario where he's currently detained by the IRS in Atlanta, urging her to marry him. Nana, deeply misled, is prepared to travel to marry him, and we are unsure of his motives, possibly aiming for marriage for immigration or other fraud purposes. She has lost approximately $85,000 to this scam, and recently sent her driver's license to an unknown recipient, increasing our concerns about further identity theft or looming property fraud. Efforts to intervene through banks and legal channels have been unsuccessful, as she is still deemed capable of handling her personal affairs. Our family feels powerless as this situation worsens, and even with my fiancé's extensive background in cybersecurity, we find ourselves at a loss. We would appreciate any advice, resources, or if you could, highlight this story on your platform to raise awareness about the dangers of social engineering scams targeting the elderly. Thank you for your commitment to educating people on these critical issues. Sincerely, Deanna."
Heartbreaking.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, this is going to keep going until Nana realizes this is a scam or she runs out of money.
Right.
One of those two things are going to happen.
You want to go through this just bit by bit and sort of we'll narrate it as we go?
Sure.
So we start off here with Nana sold her husband's truck. So I'm assuming here that this is a deceased husband.
Right.
So she's a widow.
Yep.
So she's selling the truck and someone comes along to buy the truck.
It could have been that she sold the truck to another buyer and got some cash for it. And this guy just so happened to start talking to her when she was trying to sell it.
So it could have happened through the process of selling the
truck. Or it could have been that this guy somehow made off with the truck as well.
Yeah. So either way, that's what prompted the relationship here.
Right.
So we've got, Nana is in a position of vulnerability.
Yes.
Right? She's in the process. She's still, I suspect, grieving.
Yep.
She is selling something that was the property of her former loved one. And so she's vulnerable.
Yeah.
And this person comes along and likely takes advantage of that. Let's talk about the isolation. Deanna says that Nana has been isolated from the family, even including a uncle who's a retired police officer.
Retired police officer. Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
Right.
But, if this is one of her sons, I would guess, that's a retired police officer. If it's the author's uncle,
could be,
or maybe a son-in-law. But if you have someone you've known and trusted all your life, and they're telling you this is a scam, the influence this guy has over this woman is remarkably strong.
Yeah. Well, he's woven a spell over her.
Right.
That's exactly what's
happening. He's convinced her that he genuinely loves her, and she believes it.
Right.
So you're arguing against what is her truth, not objective truth, but her subjective truth, which is very hard to argue against.
Right. And her heart is all intertwined in it because he's put her in this situation of feeling like there's some sort of deep, intimate relationship here. The thing about being retained by the IRS in Atlanta, I suspect there's nothing to that.
Right.
It's just putting a distance between them, an excuse why they can't meet in person.
Here I might actually think it might be worth, depending on where you live in the U.S., it might be worth a trip to Atlanta, to the IRS office.
Mm.
Go in there and say, hey, my Nana says you're holding her boyfriend here in a detention cell. We'd like to see him. And see what the IRS
Nana
says.
With you? Yeah, is there IRS jail? I mean, I don't...
There is not IRS jail.
Okay.
No.
Okay. Yeah. So I don't think there's anything to that. This notion that that he wants to marry her. I don't think there's anything to that.
No, that's just all part of the romance scam.
Right. And he's already taken her for $85,000.
Yep.
This thing about sending her driver's license off. I mean, that's frightening.
Yeah.
I think
watch your bank account because somebody else is going to be opening bank accounts in her name.
Right. Right. Here's proof of my ID.
Right.
And I don't know, with a driver's license, it's not like a credit card where you can just cancel it and it doesn't work anymore.
Right.
I mean, it's still
valid.
It's a valid ID. She could get it replaced, but it would basically be a duplicate of the one that she mailed off.
Yeah, depending on how the state does driver's license numbers. You're right.
So I would definitely put some kind of credit monitoring in place.
Yeah. If it's possible, I would freeze her credit and freeze her telechecks so that nobody else can open a bank account in her name.
Yep.
Because that's what's happening next with that ID.
Right. Right. In terms of additional advice, I think one of the challenges here, I mean, normally what I would say is try to find someone who Nana respects who's in a position of authority.
Yeah, we've had story after story where even that doesn't help.
Right.
Maria was on one time telling a story about somebody that wouldn't listen to the priest.
Right.
Wouldn't listen to the police officer. And this sounds very similar. What I would say is see if you can slow things down a little bit.
Mm.
See if you can not totally stop it. Maybe sell it to her like, we're not going to totally stop sending this guy money, but we're going to slow down a little bit and see what happens.
Right.
And then if you can do that, perhaps the guy will lose some interest. Although if he's done the homework of really isolating her, it's a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really a problem.
One thing I wonder, there's mention of as we said, a family member who's a police officer. I wonder if bringing in a higher level law enforcement person could be helpful.
That might help.
At the level of loss that we've had here, I would think, first of all, get in touch with your local police, but then also your local FBI field office.
Yeah. And then maybe, I don't know, if you still have friends at the police department, Maybe get like 20 police officers together and have them all tell her it's a scam.
Or the chief of police.
The chief of police.
Someone who she would, I mean, to me, an FBI agent coming to the home.
Right.
Might be an increase in authority that she would take seriously. And, yeah. and I, someone in that position, or someone who deals with the scam side of this, might be able to break that spell.
Right.
To be able to say, you know, I'll bet this is what happened, right? And Nana will say, how did you know? And the person will say, because this was what always happens.
Right.
You know, that sort of thing to try to, you know, metaphorically you grab her by the shoulders and shake her, you know, right. to break the spell of what's going on here. She is her own person and there's not any... It's her money to do with what she wants.
Right.
That's the thing. It's legally, if she wants to, you know, take all her money and throw it out in the street, she's allowed to do that.
Right.
And so...
And I don't know that that's a problem, but in this case, in these cases, it certainly is a problem.
Right. Now, it is a crime for someone to be defrauding her.
Yes.
So you can come at it at that. You know, that my relative is a victim of a crime. But again, you know, trying to get them to lock things down is really hard. There are things you can do if you're able to get some buy-in from her, there are things you can do like having alerts on bank accounts and things like that.
Yeah.
These are useful for the elderly. So for example, I have a thing with an elderly member of my family where if more than, let's say, $5,000 flows out of a bank account, I get a notification.
Right.
Right? Now, in order for that to happen, that person had to agree to that. So you can't just have it done.
Right.
But if you could convince her that this is in everyone's best interest for no other reason than just to slow things down... maybe it'll help.
Yeah. But
a heart goes out to you, Deanna. I mean, this is not an easy situation.
No, this is terrible.
Yeah, it is really heartbreaking.
If our listeners have anything to say that might help Deanna, I would love to hear it.
Yeah, if there's anybody out there who's had success here in breaking that spell, I'd love to know what worked.
Yeah,
because
me too.
I suspect there are folks out there who've been in this just harrowing situation, so... Thank you, Deanna, for sending in your note. We do appreciate you taking the time for that. And like I said, we're sorry that you're in this situation, and we hope for you the best.
Yeah, we do indeed.
All right, Joe. Well, let's go from there, and let's take a moment and switch gears. And it's time for our catch of the day.
Dave, our catch of the day comes from Kenneth, who just sent us an email.
Mm.
You like dogs, Dave?
I love dogs.
We got Fred sitting right here next to us.
That's right. Fred the dog is in studio today. Fred has come back.
Fred the cybersecurity dog.
He's on his best behavior. He has not started going through any trash cans or right. nosing anyone or anything like that. So Fred has been a very good boy.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Now you've said his name, he's coming.
Oh, hi, Fred. Don't ruin it, Fred. Okay, so what do we got here, Joe?
So the reason I asked if you like dogs is this is a puppy scam.
Oh, okay.
So it's a letter from an esteemed cardiologist.
All right, it says, "Hello, my name is Dr. Doris Linder. I am a cardiologist by profession. I work for major hospitals. I came across your email address through surfing the internet affiliated with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. My late grandmother was a puppy breeder. She died about 4 months ago, and she left a female English bulldog and a female Yorkie before she died. One of the female puppy recently had a litter, 3 puppies. They are so adorable, but due to my job as an cardiologist, it does not give me the proper time to take good care of these babies. I would have loved to take care of them myself, but due to the nature of my job, I almost do not have time for myself. So I am currently after finding for them a caring and loving parent who would take good care of them and are willing to adopt. If you are generally interested in having one or more of them, please do feel free to email me immediately for more details and information. Dr. Doris Linder. Sent from my Android device with K9 Mail. Please excuse my brevity.
Funny that they're using a K9 Mail client, which is an Android mail client. And they're
A real thing?
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I looked it up. That's kind of odd.
I thought it was just reinforcing the scam. Like, this person loves dogs so much, they're even using a dog email program.
Right. No, it's a real app.
Okay.
Yeah, this is obviously just a scammer who's just going to say, send you pictures of dogs that they found on the internet and then demand money from you. And you're going to send the money and the dog's never going to show up. There is no dog. There are no puppies.
Right. They're going to try to get you on the hook for, who knows, spaying and neutering or flea powder or whatever, something the dog needs.
Yeah, if you go like get another dog like Fred, do you know how much a golden doodle puppy costs? It's $2,000.
Yeah.
We adopted Fred from a rescue.
Yeah.
We didn't pay nearly that much.
Yeah.
We just paid the adoption fee.
Yeah.
But, $2,000, there's a lot of money in dogs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame.
It is.
All right. Well, thank you, Kenneth, for sending that in. We do appreciate it. And, of course, we would love to hear from you. You can send us your catch of the day to hackinghumans@n2k.com.
We were talking about mitigating cyber threats to your organization before your users even see them. The new Phish ER Plus from KnowBe4 was developed to help you supercharge your organization's email security defenses. How? You get a unique crowdsourcing advantage. More than 10 million highly trained KnowBe4 end users from across the globe catch and report malicious email that makes it through all the filters. KnowBe4's Threat Lab then validates it with AI and with human researchers. Phish ER Plus blocks phishing threads other tools have missed and proactively removes them from your users' inboxes. Not quite time travel, but we think you'll agree it's a vital capability in any InfoSec professional's arsenal. Visit KnowBe4.com/products/phish-ER-plus to learn more. That's KnowBe4.com/products/phish-ER-plus. And we thank KnowBe4 for sponsoring our show.
Joe, I recently had the pleasure of speaking with Bogdan Botezatu, who is the Director of Threat Research at Bitdefender. And we're talking about a hot topic. This is audio deepfakes.
Right.
Here's our conversation.
The short story is that we're investigating scams that propagate through social networks, for instance, because we're working on a solution that helps people detect such scams. I'm not going to go into too much detail about the product, but one of the things that makes it stand out is this unique combination of technology and human intervention. In order to stay on top of these threats, we need to manually analyze them and look into what the outcomes of a specific scams are. So what we're doing is chase these scams on social media, dissecting them, looking at what the scammers are using, how they're going to monetize or how they're going to capitalize on these victims. And then we log these into a file. Of course, part of the investigation is reporting them to the social network that drives this advertising. But up until now, we're pretty skeptical about the outcomes of reporting. These scams still propagate. They still keep going because probably cyber criminals are pumping huge amounts of money to have them displayed to potential victims. So this is briefly why we know so much about scams. We're not using exclusively automated technologies to identify these scams. We have real people looking into them.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into some of them here. I mean, for our listeners, can you describe what a typical one of these looks like? What kind of celebrities are we talking about, and what are they trying to do here?
Okay, I'm going to go with the high-profile list of celebrities. I'm not sure if too many of our listeners know where Romania is. It's a small country in the European Union that has the capital city in Bucharest and is mostly known for the stories about Dracula. Dracula was born in Transylvania.
Right.
We also have a president and a national bank governor and a couple of high-profile celebrities that are always present in the news cycle. And cybercriminals decided to go for all of these people, impersonate them, and put words into their mouths. So because they have huge presence on television and on the internet, it's very easy for cybercriminals to sample out pieces of video and audio with them, put all of these information into an AI algorithm, and have samples of their voice trained, right? After this happens, they will usually take regular footage and lip sync a specific text, usually claiming that these people are endorsing giveaways or investment opportunities or whatnot to gullible people. And with these fake endorsements, they will purchase ads on platforms, target specific audiences, and then have everybody see a one-minute video of how to get rich quick. And of course, a lot of people fall victim to that because these celebrities have a very deep cultural impact, I would say, into the nation. When the president tells you that there is a get-rich-quick scheme that other members of the government are hiding away from you, you will tend to believe that because it has everything. It has greed, it has the conspiracy theory, it's cool, and it's being narrated by a person in flesh and bones behind a camera, right?
Mm. Some of the ones that you all sent over for us to look at, there was one here from Oprah, and there was one from Jennifer Aniston, who are certainly well-known celebrities here in the United States. It was interesting to me that they both really follow the same pattern. These are giveaway scams. Oprah's was giving away some kind of car seat, and Jennifer Aniston's was giving away a MacBook Pro. Both for ridiculously low amounts. Is that sort of the pattern that is very common here, where it's some kind of deal that's too good to be true?
Yes, it goes even better than that. Why pay something for goods when you can get them for free? A couple of weeks ago, there was a scam campaign impersonating Mr. Beast. That's a YouTube celebrity that's very well known for charity work. He allegedly was giving away a free iPhone 15 to people. All you had to do was pay for shipment and the device was yours. So, you know what? While these devices were in short supply on the shelves of supermarkets and stores, he had 10,000 units to give, all for free. imagine that, you know, when people see that there's goods of high value given away for free, they'll take the chance, right? Particularly if they had a debit card or a prepaid card that doesn't carry too much value. So even if you fall victim to that, you're not going to miss out too much money. But thing is that when you're giving out this information, the scam goes further. These people are collecting credit card information so they can wire money to your account and then use the credit card data to do online shopping. And they're usually purchase digital currencies like Bitcoin or Ethereum to launder money coming from different other victims. So even if you're not losing anything because you have no money into that account, you're still helping people out launder money coming out from cybercrime. So nothing gets wasted in this industry.
It's a really interesting insight into some of the psychology behind this. You know, it's like some of the people who I'm not even sure I want to say the word fall for it, because it sounds like for some people, it's like playing the lottery, you know, where there's probably part of their mind that knows this is a scam, but for $5 or for $10 or for free, what have I got to lose, right? And I may come away with a MacBook Pro.
Yeah. Yeah, there's this this example that I keep bringing up to the point of where I'm repeating myself way too often. There's a well-known comic created by XKCD. I'm sure that you're familiar with XKCD.
Sure.
That is called The 10,000. The moral of this comic is that every single day, there's 10,000 people discovering what happens when you mix Coke with Mentos. They discover it for the first time. They had no idea what happened, and they learn what happened the same day. This goes absolutely perfect with cybercrime. Every single day, there's, by analogy, 10,000 people who are being defrauded for the first time. They had no idea cybercrime existed. They were like, you know, virgin. And at this point, they encountered the scammer for the first time. And they're falling victim for that because they don't have the education and they don't have the experience to stay away from that. So yeah, they learned that cybercrime exists the hard way.
It's interesting to me also that you mentioned, you know, that you and your colleagues do report this to the social media platforms. But I mean, I suppose you could say it's against their interests to try to shut these things down because of, well, they're being paid for. They're being paid to put these in front of people.
I was not allowed to say that out loud, but thank you for pointing people in the right direction.
You're not going to disagree with me.
Yes. Now, I'm sure that it's not greed exclusively. It's not just we'll let that run, that ad run until its budget gets depleted. I'm sure that there are some technical challenges, like, you know, video is very difficult to inspect automatically. I'm not going into detail that, you know, sites like YouTube can fingerprint, for instance, a video for copyrighted music, and they cannot do that for scams,
right?
Impersonating
right.
people. But probably there are, the sheer volume of ads these networks run would not allow them to manually police each and every video ad that they deliver, but they could do better. They could, for instance, automate or prioritize in an automated way ads that get a huge number of reports, because it's not just us who are reporting these ads. It's a lot of people who are tech savvy and stumble across them, report them, and then nothing happens.
Yeah, I have to say it's very frustrating for me as, you know, someone who does take the time to report these things over and over again, and they just keep popping up on my timeline. It's just maddening.
Every minute the ad stays online, it makes a lot of victims.
Yeah.
We know that there are a lot of victims because forums and Reddit threads are full of people who give their account about how they got scammed and tell people that they have learned the lesson the hard way. This is fun because when you're going through these reports, you realize that there's not one single outcome that hackers stick to. They have different scenarios to exploit people. There's scenarios where they just want the credit card number for credit card fraud. They just want information for ID theft. They might want enough information, for instance, to tweak the scam from a financial one to a romance scam, and then to a bigger financial one. There are multiple outcomes. A couple of weeks ago, we learned that some cyber criminals would initiate a scam, pay out a low value return of investment to the victim, and then entice them to invest more and more and more and more. By the time they have invested a lot of money, they will be like, you know what? You have like $50,000 gathered in your account. We need you to withdraw it. And we will happily withdraw it. We will happily assist you wire the money into your account. You don't have anything to do other than plugging your phone into the computer, install these two utilities, and close your monitor off. Give us 10, 15 minutes, and then you'll have the money loaded into your account, right? Mm. It sounds stupid, but there's a lot of people who heed that, and they will connect the device. They will install a piece of software that automatically links the phone to the computer via the Android Bridge, for instance. And the second application would be a remote access tool. So cyber criminals now have access to the computer browser, and they have access to the device that receives the second authentication factor in the form of SMS, for instance. Mm. And all of a sudden, money will start leaving the account rather than arriving into the account, because cyber criminals will keep transferring all the funds that the person has in the banking account. That's why a lot of European banks, for instance, have become so paranoid that they will lock down accounts and temporarily freeze cards whenever they identify a remote desktop solution running along the browser that opened up a new banking session.
Hmm. Interesting. So what are your recommendations here? I mean, for those of us who are sharing this kind of thing with our friends and family, I mean, what kind of information should we share?
First of all, I would say that education is a big part of helping people navigate through this new reality. If there's one thing that we realized in since the advent of ChatGPT, for instance, because we keep referencing ChatGPT as the first form of AI that the regular people could interact with. You just chat with a bot, it behaves like a human, it gives you a solution, it is empathetic, it is compassionate, it helps you out, right? That's when people understood that AI can have a huge, huge power. And the advent of this form of generative AI is now fueling cybercrime. It's fueling it to such a rate that we start doubting whenever we see something, whether it is real or not. We start asking ourselves questions. What I'm seeing now, is it real or is it special effects generated by the AI? And for most people, it is very difficult to answer that question correctly. There will be a lot of people who are mistaking AI-generated content with reality. And for a very few pool of people, these differences will be visible just because it's advertising something too good to be true. So back to the original question, I would say that education plays a key role because there's no greater tools than common sense. When you see something given away for free that costs thousands of dollars, you should ask yourself, why am I receiving that? And what makes it possible for people to unlock this economical glitch that brings infinite wealth with limited resources? If you're aware of the fact that nobody gives anything for free, just out of the goodness of their heart to strangers on the internet, you'll already have this sixth sense activated. Secondly, I would say that we should start looking into technologies that offer a deeper level of protection than what we're seeing on screen. At this point, it's a little bit difficult for technology to correctly identify AI-generated content that goes into the realms of scams. But these AI-generated content is just the top layer of a more elaborated scam. You probably saw that incident a couple of weeks ago in which a Singapore employee was instructed to wire $24 million to an external bank account.
Right.
And the order came from the CEO himself. And the employee was like, I'm not sure about that. You know, I'll have to validate with you. Are you in the office? No, I'm not in the office. I'm working remotely. But can we jump quickly into a call? I'm going to bring colleague X, Y, Z from finance. and we're going to sit together, make a decision, and then you will help us wire the money. And he indeed jumped on a Zoom call with the CEO and three other colleagues. They reached an agreement. The employee wired the money just to learn out that he was the only human in the call. The other one, the three colleagues were AI bots, and the CEO was a fraudster. So yeah. These scams are so elaborated that they don't only rely on ads showing off on people's screens. Elaborated scams usually start with a background check of the victim, the usual parts of the kill chain, learning out their phone number, their whereabouts, their list of colleagues, their list of friends. Fortunately, social media makes it so easy for cyber criminals to mount a lot of information, piece it together, and then generate the perfect scam. The AI is just the icing on the cake. It's the final layer of technology that basically seals the deal.
Joe, what do you think?
Dave, I really like that at Bitdefender, they're examining these scams to the point where they're wondering what the end game is. Mm. They want to really understand the anatomy of the scam,
right?
Which is great. Of course, it's always money is the end game, but yeah. they really want to know how the scammers are getting the victims there.
Yeah,
and they want to see what the gimmick is. It's interesting that one of the things I thought was really telling in this article was that Bogdan doesn't think that reporting these scams to social media companies helps. He said I don't think it helps, and my first thought was, I wonder why.
Yeah.
Again, social media is making money from these scams as well. I mean, they're just the front end. They're part and parcel of the scam. They like to pretend that they're not taking part of this. And Bogdan says he doesn't want to say that they are. I'll say they are. They're making money off this, Dave. And that's why they're not involved in it.
If nothing else, it just drives engagement.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, which is almost like their currency.
Yeah.
So they sell the ads, they collect the cash, and I just remain more and more unconvinced that they're doing anything about it.
Yeah,
I'm starting to think this might be part of their business model.
I'm with you. No, it's aggravating.
It is. They're impersonating Romanian political figures in Romania.
Uh-huh.
Vladimir Stepes would not have tolerated that. but they're also doing Oprah and Jennifer Aniston. And I actually looked up the video, found the video of Jennifer Aniston. It sounds very much like Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like it's exactly right, but it does sound almost exactly. I can't tell that it's not Jennifer Aniston.
Right.
Mr. Beast is also a great target for these scammers. Mm-hmm. I have an appreciation/hate relationship with Mr. Beast.
Okay.
I don't watch his videos generally.
Yeah.
I find his presence on my YouTube feed annoying.
Okay.
But my son is a big advocate and says he does a lot of philanthropy work and does give away a lot of stuff.
Yes, I have heard that.
But so I'm going to put my personal disdain for him aside and say it's terrible that he's such a great target for this because he has a reputation of being such a nice guy. And of giving stuff away, these scammers can take advantage of that and impersonate him.
Yeah.
And it's a great tool. I mean, I say great. I mean, I imagine that it's highly effective.
Right.
It's probably one of the more effective ones that they have.
Yeah.
Because he does this kind of stuff all the time. All of this is possible because there is tons of training data out there for these people.
Yeah.
There's tons of training data out there for me and you too, Dave.
Yes, indeed.
So I'm still waiting for someone to send in an audio deepfake of me saying something. So they gather up some of the training data, they make the fake endorsement video with the audio, and then they buy ads on the social media platform and they push it out and people get hooked.
Yeah.
There was one thing he talked about with in this thing where they will, when they're talking about get rich quick schemes, they will invoke the conspiracy theory kind of thing. I'm fascinated by conspiracy theories.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think most people who are part of the flat earth movement believe that the earth is actually flat.
Okay.
But I think there's an attractiveness to it. You know, we're looking at a little bit of Poe's law here, which means that if someone's online, you can't tell if they're being serious or not.
Okay.
When they talk about something. There are other conspiracy theories out there, like Kennedy assassination, right? You think about that one.
Sure.
That was actually technically a conspiracy, right? There were more than one, or maybe it was just Lee Harvey Oswald.
Where are we going here, Joe?
Right. Well, my point is, these things are attractive.
Right.
Right?
Right.
They're attractive to believe in. They will hook somebody who's already kind of vulnerable to believe in that the system's rigged against them, and that's why they haven't gotten rich. And now they're finally going to get the secret, right?
Yeah.
Like, I got an email one time that says, hey, we'd like you to join the Illuminati.
Yeah.
And I was like, but there's a small voice inside in the back of my head that goes, you can be so powerful. I was like, you sit down. I don't want to hear from you again.
But it's also like we've talked about, there could be a certain level of pre-filtering.
Yeah, absolutely.
This, right?
That's an excellent point.
You know?
And kind of what I'm dancing around here is that you get the conspiracy theory guy and he's like, oh, okay, now what do I got to do? I know this isn't going to be free, you know, because nobody gives away anything for free.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was one interesting angle that came up in this story, in this interview, rather. It's when Bogdan is talking about the, you play the lottery to get the Le Creuset pot or something, or the iPhone or the laptop, and you pay like $5 with a credit card. And if they can get your credit card information and your banking details, now they can load money into your bank account and spend it on your credit card.
Mm.
And you may not be aware that they're doing that. Because when you log into your bank account, what do you look at? The balance.
Right.
You don't look at the transactions right away. Maybe if you go through with a fine-tooth comb.
Right.
Right? Maybe once a month you look at that and you see hey, something's going on here.
Right.
But if you're just logging in, you might not see that for a while.
Right. With electronic statements, it's not like the UPS guy is going to show up with your transaction records, you know. The truck is full of them.
He's got...
Right?
Yeah. The UPS guy won't show up. Somebody from the Department of Treasury will.
Yeah.
Because you're money laundering is what's going on. You're laundering money.
Right.
And that's what these guys are doing. They're going out and spending it on cryptocurrency. And now they've got their cryptocurrency and they haven't had to risk anything. Mm-hmm. And the only thing they've done is put you at risk.
Yeah.
It's the perfect crime, Dave. He tells a story about people connecting their phone to their PC with an app on it that gives the user control of the PC. That's terrifying to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is all a mystery to a lot of people. Just install this app and then hook it to your computer and I'll take it from here.
Yeah.
Turn your monitor off so you're not watching what's going on.
I'm here to help.
Right.
Yeah.
Also, I think it's encouraging, though, that banks are now recognizing when someone is coming through over a remote desktop system, some kind of RDP,
yeah,
and they're shutting down the connections, which is great.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. One of the key points here is that the AI-generated media is just the new, he called it the top layer in very old scams. We're still looking at scams that have been around for years and years and years before the internet was a big thing,
mm-hmm.
Even longer than that. They were just... Now we're putting that veneer of AI on top of it. So what do you do to protect yourself? Of course, you educate yourself, educate those around you, tell everybody you can about what the scams look like. Remember that if something is too good to be true, that should be a big red flag.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, our thanks to Bogdan Badezatu for joining us. Again, he is the director of threat research at Bitdefender, and we do appreciate him taking the time. We want to thank all of you for listening, and of course, we want to thank our sponsors at KnowBefore. They are experts in helping users do the right thing through New School security awareness training. And that's Hacking Humans, brought to you by N2K CyberWire. Our thanks to the Johns Hopkins University Information Security Institute for their participation. You can learn more at isi.jhu.edu. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. Your feedback ensures we deliver the insights that keep you a step ahead in the rapidly changing world of cybersecurity. If you like the show, please share a rating and review in your podcast app. Please also fill out the survey in the show notes or send an email to hackinghumans@n2k.com. We're privileged that N2K CyberWire is part of the daily routine of the most influential leaders and operators in the public and private sector, from the Fortune 500 to many of the world's preeminent intelligence and law enforcement agencies. N2K makes it easy for companies to optimize your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your teams smarter. Learn how at n2k.com. This episode is produced by Liz Stokes. Our executive producer is Jennifer Iben. We're mixed by Elliot Peltzman and Trey Hester. Our executive editor is Brandon Karp. Peter Kilpie is our publisher. I'm Dave Bittner.
And I'm Joe Kerrigan.
Thanks for listening.
Hey all, Rick here. At N2K CyberWire, we're dedicated to continuously improving the quality of the news and commentary on our network. That's why we're inviting you to participate in our 2024 audience survey. It only takes a few minutes and your feedback is invaluable. Plus, you'll have the chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card as a thank you for your time. Head on over to cyberwire.com/survey. That's cyberwire.com/survey to share your feedback now.